Welcome to Everything is Changing. In each episode, we focus on circular economy, ecosystem restoration, energy transformation, sustainable mobility, and water resources. I am Ahmetcan Uzlaşık. Perspective is everything, and everything is changing. My guest today is Dr. Maria Kotari, a seasoned expert in energy transition, climate change, and sustainability with 15 years of international experience across the public sector, academia, and consultancy. Through her work with the EU and the UN, she has shaped major initiatives on green economy, decarbonization, and citizen-driven innovation. As the founder of the Energy Matrix, she now helps advance sustainability goals through strategic policy design, research, and implementation. In our conversation, we explore Europe's water security amid growing droughts, floods, and energy challenges. Dr. Kotari shares her insights on how AI and digitalization are reshaping water management, why data centers are becoming unexpected players in water use, and how Europe can balance its clean energy ambitions with sustainable resource management. We also touch on the complex relationship between technology, policy, and ecosystems, and what it will take to move slow in order to move fast toward a resilient future. Dr. Maria Kotari, welcome to Everything is Changing. It's good to see you here.
Thanks to you, Ahmetcan. Very pleased to be here. Indeed, everything is changing, and that's the very core of the energy transition.
Exactly. Well, you live in Netherlands, as far as I know, but you were in Denmark very recently, and you attended Danish Presidency Conference for Mission Ocean.
Yes, indeed.
Maybe we can start with that. What were your observations there?
Indeed, it was a very insightful mission, and it was quite interesting to hear, of course, about the Danish priorities of presidency of European Council this semester. And indeed, the conference was focusing on the Mission Ocean, so the mission under the European Commission to restore ocean waters. And given also my interest and my expertise in energy, it was quite interesting to see how also Denmark is implementing this shared use of maritime space. And particularly, I had the chance to visit a wind farm, and it was also quite interesting and insightful to hear from scientists about all the research that they're doing in order to see how the installation of a wind farm could impact bird population or even underwater population, meaning fisheries, and how actually the installation of wind farms could even be something that could even help the restoration of seabed. So there's also some examples of sea farms that they also help the cultivation of mussels. So for me, it was quite a revelation to see how actually, you know, ecosystem services and the energy transition can match together for a win-win situation.
Since we are going to talk about water security, I think the most pressing issue would be to talk about Europe's water future right now. So in recent years, as you know, Europe has faced severe droughts, shrinking reservoirs, and God knows how many heat waves that put pressure on agriculture, households, energy systems, you name it. So what I want to ask Maria is, how secure is Europe's water future right now? Are we in trouble, do you think?
I think actually, you know, the research shows that, yeah, we're in trouble. And as you already, you know, frame it, because of the acceleration of climate change, we see more and more prolonged droughts, even in parts of Europe that we have not seen them before. So talking about, I am based in the Netherlands, we have actually kind of consecutive repetitive prolonged droughts. I'm talking about the year 2022, and also this spring and summer. Of course, me being Mediterranean, it was quite a pleasure to have sunny days, but it has stressed a lot the system. And although before water availability was a given in the Netherlands, now you see that even this country has started being worried about the future. And one part, of course, we have these prolonged droughts that, of course, create stresses in the system. And at the same time, we have also floods, because when you have the extensive rainfall, and this is also part of the climate change and how the system responses, then you have floods that they can be quite intense. And those also stress stress the ecosystem, but they can be quite, dangerous also for human lives. In past years, we had some floods that they have costed human lives in Germany. And those are actually, unfortunately, the scenarios based on modeling and what we observe for the future. And the thing is that we think that it's going to be only the agriculture, because agriculture is, of course, the largest consumer of water, and meaning consumer when we're talking about water consumption, we're talking about water that is not returned to the initial source. And this is quite important. And it's not going to be only agriculture that will be under stress, but there will be also other sectors, including energy sector and other sectors that are using water. Name it also tourism and also potable water in many areas of Europe. So it's good that is also a topic that we start discussing more and more, and there are more models and research, thorough research that is happening. But yeah, I would say that the future is quite blurry. I don't want to sketch a negative picture, but I think that we need to be more and more aware also in our everyday life and everyday consumption.
As you said, agriculture is one of the sectors that is going to be affected most of this water crisis. Am I right? Mm-hmm. Since the agricultural industries consume a lot of water, and eventually when the droughts happen, it also again affects agriculture, I guess. And this is very visible for normal citizens like us, because we go to a supermarket when we want to buy something, we encounter the food inflation. So yes, would you say true. That agriculture is the most visible aspect of this water crisis?
I mean, that's true, but actually we will see also the visible effects in other parts. I mean, also recreational areas. I mean, the example of the Netherlands, I think, is quite telling. Water in the Netherlands is, the DNA, let's say, of the nation, the DNA of the country. And more you see that you have areas where before there used to be water, or for example, I want also to talk about, the cycle of the water. So if you go to Rijksmuseum, for example, you could see that there are many, many paintings that they depict the everyday life in the Netherlands. And most of them, they show Dutch people in the canals ice skating. This is also quite, apart from bike, ice skating used to be one of the hobbies, let's say. And I don't think that, a modern, let's say, painter would be inspired by that scene, because we see that happening less and less. So it's kind of changing, the society in terms that we couldn't imagine before, and what has been used to be before the normal, this is not going to happen anymore. And agriculture, of course, is one of the sectors that will be heavily impacted. And as you mentioned, we can see, other impacts also in the prices of the agricultural products, also the availability of the agricultural products. This will affect the food supply and the food ecosystem. But there are, of course, other sectors that will be heavily impacted. And I'm talking about industry and energy.
That was a great example, by the way. I never been to that museum. I only been to Van Gogh, because the museums are very expensive in Amsterdam. And
that's true. So better purchase your museum card next time. But it's really an example that we use here in the Netherlands. And I think I have seen the canals, even the city center of Amsterdam, frozen. I think the last time was that you could actually, step in and ice skate in 2018 or 2019, but not since then.
Well, let's talk about water management, and let's dive into AI a bit. In the past, if I'm not mistaken, water management has often been about quick fixes, like fixing leaks, building new dams, and relying on emergency supplies. But right now, today, we see that AI is kind of changing that with smarter forecasting, perhaps demand management, leak detection, and you name it. So how is AI changing that, especially given how closely water and energy are linked, in your opinion?
So there are different elements that we can discuss about here. So indeed, there's a growing need for AI, name them meters, and data monitoring. So we can see indeed innovation and positive aspect of applying AI in the water management. And this is something that is needed, and of course is something that if it will be implemented, the sooner it will be implemented, the better. Given of course the bloody image that I have already described on water scarcity in Europe. So this of course will enable, you know, authorities and everyone that is participating in the so-called water management to have better predictability, to monitor the data, to implement changes and adjustments as needed in order to, of course, prevent situations that we have acute water shortages that they will not only affect any industrial or any supply chains, let's say, interruption, but also when we're talking about water, about with human needs. We don't want to have and this concerns, of course, countries in the Mediterranean. And we have seen that they have faced water shortages because water, of course, was not enough to serve either the local population, but also the population that rises summertime due to tourism. So indeed, technology can be a key tool for better water management. But there is another part. There's kind of like, you know, a coin with double face. So,
well, I will get to that. Okay. Please. We started on the positive side of AI.
So let's stay on the positive side. Okay.
Yeah, because I what I see is that I feel like there are two camps. Some say AI is the lifeboat for water and energy security, given all the details that we discussed earlier. And some say that it is the iceberg. And I believe in this equation, we are the Titanic. Which side are you on? AI is definitely essential for efficiency and resilience in managing resources, as you put. But also we know that AI, when it comes to water security, has some issues that concerns us, let's say.
Yeah. Well, allow me not to take sides and wear like more on my research and academic hat and tell you that is also like, you know, an issue that is quite, current. So there are more and more researches that they're happening about wider AI application would mean about water security and energy demand. So I am kind of observing, but I can share my observation so far. So talking about energy transition per se, and water. So energy production has always depended heavily on water. So name it hydropower, cooling for nuclear and gas plants. And at the same time, also water systems rely on energy, either for pumping or for treatment or desalination. Here also think about, you know, agricultural services as well. So there are, of course, scientists that look into the shift of renewable energy. And this will change, of course, how much water the energy sector uses. And of course, you have renewables like wind and solar that they need far less water than the traditional fossil fuel power plants. However, you have biomass and hydropower, and in many places in Europe, hydropower is a key energy production sector, use much more water than fossil fuels. And then when we see the cooling methods matter. So of course, air cooling uses less water. But if you go to very innovative technologies like carbon capture and storage, that is, you know, something that we have high hopes for mitigating climate change, it will increase the water up to around 80%. And then since I talked about cooling, here comes actually, you know, the question of AI and digitalization and the data center, because the digitalization per se is driving up water use. When we're talking about a data center, those consume large amounts of electricity, which themselves also require water to produce and also need extra water for cooling. And think about also that the cooling systems of data center evaporate also the water. And in most of the cases, they use drinking water. And of course, in areas that you don't have water available also for these services, then the problem begins. I mean, if you want, I can give more details about how this process is, but I don't want to sketch a very negative picture again, because there's some also bright examples of innovation, and I can also, draw again some examples from the Netherlands.
Dr. Mario Cotteri says data centers are stealing our drinking water. So you already picked a side. I'm just kidding. So yeah, you're really right. And what I read somewhere some time ago was Microsoft reported its water use jumped 34% in 1 year because of AI cooling demands. So Wow. Yeah, as you wanted to do that before, maybe you can talk more about how these data centers are actually using water for cooling purposes.
Yes, I think that this goes like hand in hand with monitoring how much energy these data centers need, electricity. And this is something that, for example, has been already starting investigating by the International Energy Agency. I highly recommend you to read the report. I can share the report, and there's also a very insightful podcast. And that's why I said in the beginning, I don't want to take really a clear, let's say, stance, because what I have learned also from this podcast is that everything is, now it's they're running simulations, they're running models, and they're not really sure of how these things will go. Of course, there is a growing demand for energy for data centers. That means that there's going to be a growing demand for cooling of these centers, meaning a growing demand of water. And yeah, we don't have the exact figures right now. But what is really essential is really to see what is the most energy, but also water efficient cooling methods for the data centers, because there have been traditional ways of cooling the data centers, but maybe this needs to be seen in a different way, and also to see how we can treat water, and especially industrial water and not potable water, in order to be able to have both enough water to cool the data centers, but at the same time not to stress the water availability for other sectors that they will be also in need.
Forgive me for my ignorance, but
yes,
just to make it clear, these data centers are using our drinking water. First, I want to ask why drinking water, because I really don't know. And second one is that you mentioned the water evaporates after the cooling process, right? So can't we just, recycle it and reuse, or once the water is used for cooling, it's gone forever?
Yeah, that's true. But actually, there you need really to implement water reuse technologies. It's not they're coming to the scene, but it's not that they are very very advanced so far. And yeah, what I have also through studying understood is that in order to use the water needs to be of certain quality, especially for the data center. So clean water is the best one to cool a data center. That means that, yeah, water that might have minerals or industrial water needs to be treated, and of course needs to be available. That's not always the case. So you see that you have an additional, let's say, barrier. You need to implement additional water management techniques that not all the European countries, of course, have, because of course, take one that maybe their industry was not that involved. Maybe they didn't have data centers, but now we have data centers that might be installed in different areas in Europe. Of course, countries that they have experience in water management would be the ones that would be able to face these issues more easily.
Are there any innovative examples that you want to share from maybe Netherlands?
Examples? So there is a very bright first. Okay, so since we're talking about Netherlands AI and innovation, there is around an AI trap. So for example, there are some images of data centers that are floating in the Amsterdam canals. Well, I can assure you that is not the case. So you can see also, you know, all these discussions that can be, you know, easily go out of hands because also of the use of AI. However, there's a very good example of that the Google data center based here in the north of the Netherlands in Groningen. I will not pronounce the Dutch name of the harbor, but I can share that with you. That what they have implemented together with the water management company is that they wanted to reuse industrial water to cool the data center, but that was not available. Then they used to use drinking water, but because of the worsening drought and the situations, they wanted to stop that. So they partnered. Google partnered with North Water, a Dutch water treatment company. And what they've done is they harness water from a network of canals. So canals really can provide a solution to cool the data center and to cool the Google data center. And I found it quite extremely, innovative, a good, example of collaboration of two companies, that one has really this need of cooling their data center. Of course, their sustainability efforts. So you see, like, you know, big providers of data like Google and, you have mentioned before, Microsoft, and they need to showcase that they are sustainable in what they're doing, but also a company that has long-term experience in water management. But what I wanted to stress here is that this is a great example, but I think that the Netherlands also is quite standing, let's say, in water management because of the conditions of the country. The country is below sea level, and of course, with the rising sea levels, there might be like issues in different areas. So Dutch has to learn to manage water since decades ago, but I think that the situation, as we have sketched it in the beginning of this discussion, really pushes other countries, so in Europe as well, to find innovative water management solutions.
That's a really great example, and I think more journalists should write about it so that we can learn about these innovative examples. Maybe I'll write something about it in the future.
Yeah, please. Because I think actually, you know, people, they are not really aware of the water consumption that an energy data centers need. And we tend to overuse ChatGPT for, simplifying our life, but we don't think about the implications. And at the same time, you know, how would you think about how you're entering, you know, some data in your chat GTP and, asking for, I don't know, a diet plan of, or, shorten even, or improving an email that you're writing, because I think there's no much discussion around the topic. And I think that is also a quite delicate topic to discuss, especially also when we're talking about countries like the Mediterranean already had issues with water. So where you find really the balance? So again, like climate change in general, energy transition, I think that we really need to have a holistic approach and let people understand from data, let people and the public understand from science. Science is really always on our side. Science is always proactive and can even predict, the future. So raise the awareness, I think, is quite key together with science.
I just remembered that I saw this one girl in social media who was basically stopping ChatGPT as soon as she gets her answer, like not waiting until the AI finishes its response. But I don't think that will be enough to save us, maybe.
No, but I think also efficient use of AI, it is something that can be introduced as basic education, no? I mean, and I'm talking to parents and the way that we can do our research of how also, you know, more efficiently used, because we're talking again about resources, and this is actually, you know, the key issue when we're talking about climate change mitigation and adaptation and the whole discussion about energy transition. We are running out of resources and we have to find alternatives. Efficiency in use in everything can be the right answer. This is what I have learned, time and again from my long-standing, let's say right now, career on that. Before using something, it's good to know and understand the implications and how we can use that efficiently.
Yes, I totally understand. Maybe I shouldn't have laughed at that girl when I saw that. Maybe she was actually doing something very responsible. Now I have a political question. I have so many questions, but since we are forcing our limits right now, as we almost reached to half an hour, I saw that in regions like Spain and Netherlands, some residents blame tech giants or big tech, as some call it. You will know better. Yanis Varoufakis, the famous economist, always talks about the big tech for draining local water supplies and putting stress on grids. So basically what activists say is that your cloud dries out my river. Are these local protests, do you think, justified, or do they risk slowing down Europe's digital and energy transition, so to say? It's a hard question, I know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard question. Again, there are different elements that we need to understand there, where the protests come from and what are the needs of the local society and what were the measures maybe, of these big data centers or factories that have been installed. But that's also, when we're talking about water, we really need to see also regional disparities. And what the impacts are, as you say, in regions that they have the rivers, so on and so forth. So the protests are not unjustified. And I'm actually highly recommend you to go and check the issues of the Tesla mega factories in Germany and how this actually stress the local community and water supplies at that region. But then the other thing is that those companies and those data centers bring also jobs. So AI, of course, can drive skills, can drive, job creation in certain areas, but again, can indeed stress local ecosystem services. So where I would say there is a silver, lining, is that there needs to be feasibility studies and impact assessments before such a data center or factory or you name it, before it is installed in a region, no matter how big the population is there. Because sometimes you see that maybe some companies, they just say, oh, okay, it's not very densely populated. But for me, that's not an argument. For everything, you need to have an impact assessment before, an environmental impact assessment, and take into consideration of what the stresses would be for regional ecosystem, for regional water resources, and for regional, of course, what energy also needs. So again, I think that science can give us the answers. However, you can imagine that those impact assessments can take some time, and sometimes technology or employment cannot wait. So it's a matter of balancing everything.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that because it's my final question. I was going to ask, how should we really balance in between using AI, between water management, water security, and energy security? And what is very related to that is, as we know, Europe is racing to expand renewables, grids, and at the same time, critical raw material supply chains, which is to extract those mines. Obviously, we're going to use them in wind farms and solar panels, but to extract them, I'm not even talking about the...
To extract them, we will need more water because those need to be cleaned, so on and so forth.
And I'm not even talking about the geopolitics side of it. We know
this is a matter of...
Exactly.
This is a matter of another podcast. I mean, I completely agree with you. And of course, I am an enthusiast of clean energy transition. But there are many, many elements and many impacts that we need to see before. And before, taking a step, we really need to see how we, what is going to be the effect of on the current system, on the current energy system. So for example, yeah, renewables are not the panacea. You can install wind turbines in a prominent area or solar panels, but if you don't have the necessary infrastructure, meaning about electricity grids to channel this energy that is produced by renewable sources, then you might have many counter effects. And we have seen that in Spain, we have seen that in Greece, that of course when sun shines abundantly, but you have a saturated a grid system, then you don't get the results that you have foreseen, the good results of renewable energy use. So this is the same goes for everything. And I would say that we need more research and measures taken before taking the step. I would say that it's better to, of course, climate change cannot wait and mitigation should not wait, but it's better to make conscious choices that they are based on data, they are based on science, instead of taking fast steps and channeling money to just do installations that may be prove quite intensive in the future in many aspects. So move slow in order to be able to move fast to the clean energy transition.
Amazing final message. Eh?
It's actually you know the oracle of Delphi, yeah? And there is actually this famous quote about that you have to move slow in order to move fast. So I think that would be actually my my final take of how we should approach energy transition and everything related to also water management and AI use.
Thank you, Dr. Maria Kotari. That was an amazing conversation. I really enjoyed it and I learned a lot.
Oh, really? I'm really happy. I mean, I think that in energy transition, we keep on learning every day because there's a new topic that arises every day. And I think that especially the question of water, it's something that really need to be more closely observed. And I'm also very happy to see that there are initiatives from the part of the European Union and the European Commission, the EU Resilience Strategy, and also an initiative about AI and energy efficiency. So all this will be launched. They are also currently under open public consultation. So you see that it attracts the political interests, and at least the European Commission as an institution takes steps forward. So let's keep the conversation opening. And thanks to Revolve also, to giving time and space to that issue. And I'm of course at your availability, sharing more resources for revolvers to educate themselves and learn more.
Of course, thank you, Dr. Maria.
Thanks, Ahmet-chan.
That was my conversation with Dr. Maria Kotari. I found her perspective on the intersections between water, energy, and AI both eye-opening and urgent. A reminder that the path to sustainability is not only about innovation, but also about efficiency, foresight, and balance. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow Everything is Changing on your favorite podcast platform and share it with someone interested in how technology and climate policy shape our shared future. Awareness begins with conversation. And as always, perspective is everything, and everything is changing. See you next time.